Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Scrub Life podcast. This is a podcast for and about the amazing field of surgical technology, and I'm so grateful that you are with me. My name is Chris Blevins, and I have the utmost honor of having our guest speaker tonight. She is such an inspiration to me, and I just know that her journey is going to be one for you. I'd like to welcome Stephanie Austin. She is the Surgical Technology Program Director at Walter State Community College in Sevierville, Tennessee. She is a colleague of mine. She is an incredible friend. Stephanie does site visiting for accreditation reviews for the ARC. She plays a huge part in the Tennessee AST State Assembly and currently holds the role of Vice President. And even more so than her journey as an educator, what I hope that you get tonight is inspiration and motivation to continue your own educational journey. Stephanie stumbled into the field of surgical technology, and she has taken it. It has become a passion of hers, and all while succeeding in our career field, she has also pursued degree after degree after degree. And we as a profession are going to be better off for it. So please listen to her journey tonight. Enjoy a few laughs because, well, we are good friends and, well, things happen. So anyway, without further ado, here is season 6, episode 5, Stephanie Austin, You Can Do It, an educational journey. Here we go. All right. Well, everyone, please let me have the pleasure of introducing a dear friend, a colleague, an educator, all around just amazing human being. But I want to introduce to you tonight, Stephanie Austin. So, Miss Austin, thank you so much for being here on this podcast.
You are so welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
And my pleasure. Absolutely. So I guess to begin this episode, I want to preface it by saying that education in general has been at the forefront of every conversation we've had, not just between you and me, but obviously we've seen it at conference.
Yes.
We see it on the various social media platforms and just in conversations with clinical sites and colleagues, and just the list goes on, right?
Yes.
But education is a big deal right now. And I think it all began with ARC's requirement that now surgical technology programs must be in it, at the associate degree level.
Yes, it has. And, you know, there are a lot of benefits for the surgical technologist from this mandate.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to see it a little bit already in Knoxville with increases in pay and different benefits like that.
Yeah.
They are realizing that if surgical technologists have the same degree as some of their nurses, they're going to have to start
paying us that way.
Yeah.
I completely agree.
Which is the biggest reason. It's one of the reasons that the ARC has taken this step.
Yeah.
But it's a step that's been in the process since 1998. Uh-huh. So, you know, it's well past overdue.
Yeah, I agree. And we've already talked in previous episodes about the fact that we need a bigger seat at the table. We
exactly.
need to be a part of more conversations when it comes to things like what our scope of practice is and just the field of surgical technology in general.
Exactly.
So that brings me to the fact that I really wanted people to hear your story. We live in Tennessee now. So
yes. Lucky, I love the we.
Yes. There's lots of we's in this podcast tonight. But in Tennessee, I've gotten to know you. I already knew you were remarkable, but to hear how you became a surgical technologist and to hear how you got an education, it's been inspiring to me. And so I just know that it's going to be inspiring to the people that are listening tonight who maybe didn't have the opportunity to listen to you at the Educators Conference. I owe you an apology, by the way. So I'm going to go ahead and say it. Go Vols. And
yes.
She is a Vols fan and not a Gators fan. which I was evil.
I will accept your apology.
Thank you.
Okay. It did make me less nervous, so I guess it's okay.
Yes. So like, yes. Goal accomplished, right?
Yeah. Correct.
So anyone who is going, what the hell are they talking about now? I had the utmost privilege of introducing Stephanie Austin as she spoke at the AST Educators Conference this past February. Was that? Yeah. And so as a joke, as to get her nerves, I literally said she was the biggest Gators fan on earth, and she was mic'd. So that was fun.
Yes, it was fun. Everybody heard the true OR in me.
Yes.
We'll and say that.
I deserved it. But it was great. And then, of course, as educators, you know, the I guess bare minimum standard is that we at least hold one degree higher than the degree that we are teaching.
Correct.
So most of us have bachelor's degrees. Some of us are currently drowning in a master's program. And then there are those of you who are so far ahead of the curve, and went out there and grabbed that doctorate. And you are literally rocking it, even if you don't believe me. So I think that as an educator, as a colleague, as a friend, your story is important, and I want people to hear about it because I think it encapsulates what we see in education, but also maybe it's going to inspire our colleagues who are still behind the Mayo stand, right, to go after their degree.
Right.
Check that box, right?
Yeah. And it's just like the other day I was on Facebook and there was one of our colleagues that was, I take that back, it was on the surgical tech page, and there was a lady who said, am I too old to go back to school?
Oh, Lord, no.
And that's exactly what I said. You know, I'm still in school and I'm not 25.
Oh, no?
No. Twice that.
Oh, yeah. I stopped at 25.
Yeah. Yes. No. I will own my 50.
Yeah.
And I've owned my age since I was in the eighth grade, because at that point in my life, I lost a very dear friend, mm-hmm, that was my age.
Yeah.
And I said at that point, you know, every day is precious and I'm going to own it to the bitter end.
I have my mentor, Cindy Mask, shout out to the great Cindy Mask. She has always said that old age is a gift denied to many.
Yes.
And I want to make sure, I'm sure I'm botching that. So Cindy, my apologies, but the whole point is that, you know, there are many of us who would love another day on this earth.
Absolutely.
So yeah,
yes,
I will, painstakingly own my wrinkles and things. So yeah, maybe some Botox will be in my future. Let's not laugh, right? Let's keep it real, y'all. But so just as I've probably made this comment many times in our previous episodes, because I don't think any of us ever grew up saying, I'm going to be a director of a surgical technology program.
No.
And then go to figure, like, before you do that, you actually have to be a certified surgical technologist. And I think there are very few people that grew up thinking that that was their pathway too. And as educators, we see that non-traditional student all the time. And mm-hmm, we see them be super successful. And they bring a lot to the table.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So I know, like, spoiler alert, she's a non-traditional student, but I know that was your pathway. So
right
before we get into where you're at now, and we'll make the introduction about your amazing program later, because mm-hmm, you're doing some incredible things here in Eastern Tennessee, but how did you even get into the field of CST to begin with?
Well, let's go way back.
Yeah, way back. All right.
I'm going to take you a little further back than you even know.
Oh, Lord.
Yes.
Oh, man. So I'm learning things tonight.
In the fifth grade.
Yeah.
My fifth grade teacher, I always... She was also my basketball coach.
Really?
So I was always inspired by her. And I thought, I'm going to teach and coach basketball.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's how it started.
Well, I mean,
that was my first passion, was I was going to be a teacher.
Well, see, now you're a teacher and you cheer on basketball.
Yeah, I do cheer on a lot of basketball.
Yeah, go yes. Balls, by the way.
Yeah, March Madness. Let's don't talk about that right now. March Madness. No. So anyway, then when I got into high school and all of that, I found the field of physical therapy, and I was going to be a physical therapist assistant. Graduated high school, moved to Nashville, started school down there.
And where, now you have to tell people where you were at.
I was at Volunteer State Community College.
And you went, and so you're from Crossville.
Crossville, Tennessee.
Which is kind of like in between Nashville and Knoxville. Yeah,
it's about it's an hour from Knoxville, an hour and a half from Nashville.
I'm learning still. Yes. I'm trying to figure Tennessee out. Yes. Paper mill equals Waffle House. And that's all I know.
That's a story for another day.
That is.
So anyway, I went to physical therapy school and I was in classes. I was in the intro to physical therapy, and all I wanted to talk about was how much money I was going to make and how much paperwork I got to do.
Yeah.
And
by the way, I mean, yay for money, but
don't like to do either. I mean, the paperwork is not on my radar.
Right.
And so I had a friend, mm-hmm. you know, we have friends for seasons. I had a friend for a season.
Yeah.
And I was taking the bones and muscles test for anatomy. And she told me that if I made 100, then she had a surprise. Well, she had bought me a massage. So
I want that kind of hello.
I know.
My birthday's in November.
Yes. Yes. It's just a few days after mine.
It is. Yes. I know. How about we'll do a group.
Yeah, exactly. And so I went to my appointment for my massage. And at the end of that semester, I withdrew from school. And I went to massage therapy school.
You just found your calling. Yeah.
Yeah, I did. And
that doesn't seem like too far off,
no,
though. Like physical therapy and then, because you were an athlete growing up.
Correct. Right?
And so then I'm sure you had many visits with physical therapists.
Oh, yes.
As an athlete.
Yes.
And then to have
more as an adult.
Don't we all, right?
Yes.
But then to have like that same healing touch and be able to, you know, to help people in that way.
Right.
That seems like that's a good flow.
It was a good transition because I realized real quick I wasn't interested in physical therapy. And it was wonderful.
And so were you a mom? Were you like,
I was.
Yeah, how is,
I,
let's talk about your personal life on a national podcast.
Let's do. let's see. Let's just get down in the weeds.
Let's just do it.
I found out in my first semester in college that I was expecting my first son.
Yes.
And so that was prior to me starting massage therapy. Because I had done two or three semesters before I got into that. And so he was born in 1991.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1994, I started massage therapy while I was pregnant with my second son. And I was the massage therapy mannequin dummy.
Yeah.
For the prenatal massage, and they put me in labor.
Yeah.
What? I went into labor 3 weeks early. Yes.
Oh my God. So did that person get an A or did they fail?
Oh, they were I was the only pregnant one.
Yeah.
So they were all practicing on me.
Oh, that sounds like
I was very relaxed.
Absolutely.
Obviously, it put me in labor.
Too relaxed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So he was born 3 weeks early.
Well.
And so that was in 95 was when I graduated. And I had a business. And then in 97, I got divorced.
Yeah.
No, I lied. In 96, I got divorced. In 97, I moved back to Crossville. Packed my boys up, moved back to Crossville.
So that back then, that was in Nashville, right?
Yes, yeah. That was in Nashville still.
Yeah.
And so I packed up and moved back to Crossville. And got remarried.
Mm-hmm.
Had my third son, who weighed 9 pounds and 5 ounces.
Oh, my.
And... Now, I don't want to say he did damage, but,
oh,
you
Lord,
know.
Girl. Yes. What? I've had four. Yes. Trust me, they did damage.
Yes, yeah. They do.
Well, so, but before you got to that point,
uh-huh.
right, like you were massage therapist.
And yeah.
Back then, that was kind of like an independent contractor.
It
right?
was. It was. I was so, a massage you know, therapist. And then when I went through
divorce
my,
changes.
Yeah, divorce changes a lot of things. I still did some massage in people's homes.
Yeah.
Have a portable table, wheel travel kind of thing.
To Maryville, Tennessee.
I still have a portable
there we
table.
Go, yeah.
But we, I had to have a job that I had insurance for my kids.
Yeah.
I can't depend on dad to do that. So yeah. I was still doing massage on the side, but I initially went to work at a daycare.
Mm-hmm.
And then that wasn't very lucrative and I was having trouble making bills.
Yeah.
And I was hired at UPS. I loaded trucks.
Oh my gosh.
Started at
labor.
Started at 3 o'clock in the morning, loaded the trucks. It worked well. I lost 50 pounds.
You know? My God.
It was wonderful. And then I started working part-time at Home Depot while I was still working at UPS. Man. And Home Depot offered me a full-time position that was going to pay me more than working the two jobs. So I took that and stopped working at UPS. And then I started having trouble getting my kids picked up.
Yeah.
When you were full-time then at Home Depot, you had to work at least one night shift. So I always did that on Wednesday when they were supposed to be with their dad. Mm-hmm. And then I started getting phone calls that he wasn't picking them up, and I was getting in trouble at work, and
yeah,
I was frustrated and complaining to my mother one day. And the next day I got a phone call and says, "I hear you're looking for a job." And I said, "I am." And they said, This was at the ceramic tile plant that my mother worked in Crossville.
In Crossville. Yeah.
Yeah. And I said, and this was somebody that I had played ball with.
It's a small town.
Yeah, well, it's a small town. When I was in high school, we played volleyball, and Mom worked at the tile plant, and this lady worked there, and they had a volleyball team that would play in a league.
Yeah.
And I got to where I was playing with them. So she knew who I was.
Right.
And so I said, "Yeah, I'm looking for a job."
Yeah.
And she said, "Well, it's yours. I just need you to fill out an application
to
make it official." And I'm like, "Okay, I just accepted a position in Crossville, and I have done nothing to prepare for this."
Right.
Yeah. So.
Well, but single mom, right?
Right.
And single I think mom. Divorce opens doors. It shuts doors. It's hard.
It is. It's
and
very hard.
Somebody who's experienced it, like I get that.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of pressure being a single mom, and I, mm-hmm. as an educator, and I can count, God, over and over again, how many single moms went through my program.
Oh, yeah.
And you can too.
Absolutely.
And so, but we do what we have to do our kids. And gosh, it sounds like what you had to do was so much manual labor.
It was. And before all of that, I worked in the restaurant business from high school until.
Yeah. So hard work isn't anything new for you. So you got this tile factory opportunity that landed in your lap.
It did.
You took full advantage of
that. I did. I moved in with my parents for a little while. God, that's hard. That's hard when you've lived away from mom all those years to move back in, even though it was briefly until I got my house ready to move into.
Right.
And so.
So all of that has got to take its toll, I would imagine.
It did.
Right?
Yeah.
So that kind of segues us into your next.
Yes. So then.
How you found medicine.
Right. So then, as I said, I got remarried and I had Gary, and he was 9 pounds and 5 ounces. And
oh, Gary.
Yeah. Love him.
Gary, we love you.
Yes. But then about a year after he was born, mm-hmm. I found out I needed a bladder sling. Mm. Funny story. I was coaching my middle son's baseball team, yelled at one of the kids and had to change my clothes. And I realized it was time needed to go see the doctor.
It's no longer.
Luckily, I had on dark jeans and nobody noticed but me, but you know, it was time.
It's no longer trampolines
exactly.
or coughing or
I can't do that anymore. So I went to the doctor, found out I had half a bladder sling.
Right.
So the day of surgery, I'm in the holding room, you know, how this process works.
Of course.
Everybody comes in and talks, and I am terrified.
Never
been put to sleep. All of the fun things.
You've never had surgery before at all?
No.
Yeah.
No. So, well, I'd had some work done on my nose where it had gotten broken when I played basketball in high school, but I didn't remember a whole lot about all of that.
Right.
And so.
It's an intimidating time in PACU. You know, even with Versed or without the IV and the consents. And of course they tell you all the things that can go wrong.
That can go wrong, yes.
And it's a lot of individuals that are doing their daily job. And I think sometimes we get remiss about that.
Right. And although I was married, you know, there was still, and everything was wonderful in my marriage at that time, but you always have, because of a previous relationship, have it in the back of your head, you know, I'm all that my kids have.
Of course.
And so that's terrifying too.
Yeah. Well, mamas take that on.
We do.
Anyway. So yeah.
We do.
So you're scared shitless.
Scared shitless.
Or peeless.
Yes. That too. That too. And they've given me a little Versed. And so they start wheeling me back. And I remember just as plain as if it was yesterday. Now there are parts that fade in and out.
Of course.
But the important part to the story, I do remember. They turn the corner into the OR and I look up and there stands a guy that I went to high school with. We played basketball together. Yes.
Awkward.
We played basketball together. We rode four-wheelers and motorcycles. We hung out.
So he was in the OR. You're turning the corner in surgery, yeah. Going to the OR, yeah. And here's this dude
yeah.
who you kind of grew up with and hung out with.
And I went
straight up about to be putting life
out
of
him. Oh, yeah. And I went,
awesome.
Oh, no. He said, no, my daughter's got an awards banquet.
Yeah.
He said, but they told me it was you and that you were scared. And I didn't want you to be afraid.
Oh, my gosh.
And so when they got me onto the OR table, he came and he grabbed a hold of my hand like I was his long-lost girlfriend.
You were.
I guess. And he held my hand while I went to sleep.
I just, first of all, if you're listening to this and your heart didn't flutter a little bit and yeah. you didn't kind of take a breath, rewind it and do it again.
Yeah.
Because that, how awesome mm-hmm. is that you needed him at that moment?
I did. But it did more to me than just me needing him in that moment, because my doctor had already told me that if I did not change professions,
mm-hmm.
If I did not get out of that physical lifting,
manual labor
all day long,
right,
that this procedure was not going to work. He said, you need to find a new profession.
And so no pressure.
No pressure.
Oh my God, yeah. You're already having surgery for the first time. You're scared.
Yeah.
You're responsible
mm-hmm.
for these gorgeous children.
Right.
And now, you have to open another door.
Yeah.
And then this angel came and held your hand.
Came and held my hand. It was amazing.
So surgery went well?
Surgery went well. They took me to recovery. My mom was there, and I looked at her, and I said, Mom, I know what I want to do with my life. She said, what? And I said, I have no idea. She thought it was the drugs.
Well, you know.
And I said, no, really. And I said my friend's name, and I said, he was in the operating room and he held my hand while I went to sleep. And I said, I want to do that.
Yeah. What is that? Right.
Yeah. And that's what she said. What does he do? I said, I don't know. Well, how are you going to find out? I'm going to call his mother.
It's what you do in a small town, right?
It's what you
just call his mama and say, hey.
Exactly. She lived 5 minutes from my mama. So
that's amazing.
So I called and she told me what he did.
Uh-huh.
And he was a surgical technologist.
Surgical technologist.
And he had gone to the TCAT in Crossville. And so.
So get it, girl.
Yeah, exactly. So I had 6 weeks off before I could go back to work. And I went, took the entrance test,
mm-hmm.
and did an interview and all the things to be accepted to the program.
Now tell people what TCAT is, and just in case they don't know.
It's the Tennessee College of Applied Technology. Mm-hmm. It is a vocational work what do you call it?
School?
Yeah. Okay. It's a vocational school. And we go and, it was a diploma program. So it was a 1-year course.
Yeah.
So
you did all of the entrance things that you're supposed mm-hmm. to do.
And then I got put on the waiting list.
No, but my life is changing.
Yes.
I can't be on a damn waiting list.
And I'm on a waiting list. Now this was in August. So by September was when I found out I was on the waiting list.
Uh-huh.
Classes didn't start in March.
Oh, okay. So,
time to pray. all the things. And so February rolls around and I still haven't been called.
Oh, nail biting.
And I'm like, well, it just wasn't meant to be. That's just how I take everything in life.
I know.
It just wasn't meant to be.
I'd have been up on a...
I didn't even make a phone call.
No.
Nope.
Girl,
not one phone call.
I would have been dialing everybody I knew. Yeah.
And then the week before classes started, my phone rang. And they offered me the position. And before she could get it out of her mouth, I said yes. I mean, literally, I was ready. Because I was having a really bad day at work anyway. So that was just, the icing on the cake for me.
Absolutely.
So...
It just, I think divine timing is something I strongly believe in, but at the same time, still struggle to have faith in.
Yes.
And so that to me is just another example of when it's meant to be, it's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And after that happens so many times in your life, you finally start believing.
Yeah. Some of us.
It's hard.
It is hard.
Yeah.
Some of us still are like, wait, I do a podcast.
So. Exactly.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well,
some of us are still struggling.
I think the same thing. So
you said yes.
I said yes.
And it started that next week.
Yes.
And you're a full-time
yes.
employed
on day shift. Yes.
Three kids.
Mom with three kids.
Holy crap.
Working 40 to 60 hours a week, depending if we're on overtime.
Yeah.
And I decided that, yes, I'm doing this, but it's all during the day. So what do? You go to second shift. Uh-huh. That's all you can do. I couldn't quit work.
No.
You know, my husband, well, that's another story, but I couldn't depend on that. So, sure. You know, I knew I had to keep working.
Right.
And so I called my boss.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, can you move me to second shift? He said, well, yeah, but do you mind telling me why? And I said, well, I applied to the surgical technology program at TCAT and I was accepted today. And I said, and that those classes are all during the day, so I need to be on second shift. And he says, well, I'll move you to second shift, but you're not smart enough to do that.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, hell no.
That's what he said.
He did.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So
I'm happy that this is not a video podcast at the moment, people, yeah. Because I would throat punch someone in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
They had the audacity to say, hey, I'll do it, but you're not good enough.
Yeah.
Man, with enemies like that, right?
Who needs
or who with needs friends them? Like that, who yeah. needs enemies?
With friends right? like that, who needs
or with
enemies?
A boss like that, who needs motivation?
Oh, it gave me all of the motivation.
Yeah. I would imagine somebody yes. telling Miss Stephanie Austin that she can't do something yeah. is more of a, well, now you're going to watch this.
Well, here, hold my beer and watch this. Let's just say it like it is.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. Yeah,
because that's exactly what happened. And so I had a really good group of girls that I was in class with. We didn't have any guys. And there was about four of us who decided that we were going to compete with grades and all of that.
Yeah.
And
good friendly competition.
Yeah, good friendly competition.
Yeah.
And we got down to graduation and we got our grades. And I'll tell you how that all turned out in a minute. But after we had done our walkthrough for graduation and everything, they released us to go for the day and to be back that night to graduate. I went and ate lunch with my mother.
Shout out to Miss Austin.
Yes.
I love you. Yeah. Love Mama Austin.
My mama's awesome.
She is.
And so I went in and all my coworkers were eating lunch. It was lunchtime.
Yeah.
And so one of them said, hey, how's school going? I said, oh, I graduate tonight. Really? And my ex-boss is standing over in the corner because of clinical. I had to kind of stop working at that point.
Yeah.
And well, how did you do? Oh, I graduated at the top of my class with a 99.4.
Hell yeah.
And he drops his head and he exits the room.
Rightfully so.
Rightfully so.
Tail tucked between right. his narrow-minded
yes.
legs.
Yes. So, yes. So that was how I got into Search Tech. And
so I love that, first of all, you had the opportunity to express your success
mm-hmm.
to your boss.
Right.
But I also want to take a minute because you recently had the opportunity to close another circle because you got to see the guy who encouraged you to even go to Surge Tech School.
Yes.
And
yes,
just take a few minutes and say it because I just think another divine timing moment.
Right.
Another like ability for us to have gratitude and right. for us to show people when they affect our lives. And I hate that it was at a funeral. But
right. Yes. I had to attend a funeral in Crossville about a month ago. And I walked into the funeral home and there he stood.
The gentleman who held my hand
when I had surgery. And I hadn't seen him since that day.
Yeah.
So I had never really gotten to talk to him about what happened. And I told him, he said, I hear you've been trying to get a hold of me. And I said, well, I wanted your permission to use your face in your picture.
Right.
Because I was doing a presentation and you were in it. He said, why was I in it? I said, do you remember when I had surgery and you held my hand when I went to sleep? He said, yeah. And I said, that's the reason I became a surgical tech. He said, no way. That was always his answer for everything. No way. I said, yeah, it really is. And I said, and, you know, I'm grateful
yeah.
for what you did for me, not just the surgery, but, you know, for showing me this amazing profession that I now love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that you had that opportunity
yes.
to show him. And I think that, you know, it shows us that every day we affect people, even when we don't even know it.
Oh, yes.
And just you know, don't be a jerk.
Don't be a jerk.
Show kindness.
Yes.
And do the small things, because ultimately at the end of the day, like, it's the small things that matter. And you just never know.
No.
He changed your life.
He did.
For the better.
Right.
And I think that this is a great opportunity for us to take a pause, and I can wipe the tears from my eyes and blow my snotty nose, because it's so emotional. Like, I'm just so grateful that he did that.
Yes.
And I'm grateful that you are sharing your story. And so now we get to, I wish I had Rocky theme song. Like, I wish that I had permission to use that,
right?
Because the Eye of the Tiger and all of the like 80s rock that just,
oh yes,
because that's how I feel about you at this moment. So yeah, so we'll take just a few seconds to get rid of the snot and wipe our tears and talk about the next half of your life, because it's super inspiring. So
all right,
give me a minute, we'll be back, y'all. All right. Thank you for taking that break with me. Our voice gets a little, you know, we get cotton mouth for sure.
Yes.
So definitely. Yeah. So I love where we ended, and I think it's a great kind of segue into the next part of your life, because your clinical, like, first of all, we know the sacrifices that you made, that many moms make, you know, just in what we do, what we have to do to provide for our family, you know, dads out there as well.
Right.
But then you also have experienced school as an adult who mm-hmm. has a family to provide for and works.
Right.
And then I also think it's really important to talk about your clinical experience mm-hmm. because you lived in the central time zone, but yes. then you did clinical in the eastern time zone.
That's
Isn't
right.
that correct?
That's correct.
But ultimately, that was life-changing for you.
It was.
Yeah. So talk to me about that. So you lived in Crossville.
I lived in Crossville.
Went to TCAT at Crossville.
Correct.
For surgical technology.
Yes.
And then your clinical placement was where?
Well, my instructor came in and said, we have the opportunity to go to a new clinical site. And she said, is anybody interested in going to the UNA? And she got about that far before my hand was in the air.
You were like, yes.
I knew where it was going to be. And so, yes, I went to the University of Tennessee Medical Center. And this was
located in Knoxville, Tennessee, which is in the Eastern time zone.
And I lived just across the line in yes. the Central time zone. So when I would get up to go to clinical, I would have to be up at 4 o'clock in the morning mm-hmm. because it was an hour and 15 minute drive. So 4 o'clock in Crossville is 5 o'clock in Knoxville. An hour and 15 minutes to get there is 6:15. Mm-hmm. Give me time to change clothes and be in huddle.
Oh, do you hear that, students? We're in huddle.
Yeah.
Change, ready to go at 6:30 a.m.
6:45.
Mine are at 6:30.
Right. UT for employees was 6:45.
Yes.
So we were there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there are a lot of things that you can't control when you live that far from where you're going to clinical / work.
Yeah.
Car accidents, weather.
40 in general.
I-40, well, it's not bad in the morning. Going home was a nightmare.
Gosh.
But the cool thing about it is I would leave clinical at 3 o'clock
right.
and I would get home at 3:15.
Well, there you go.
Right.
But I'm sure that physically and mentally, your body did not.
My body did
register
not.
That.
Well, not at first, but it adjusted.
Sure. Oh my God.
And then I was hired at UT before I graduated from clinical. So I would work 3 5-hour shifts during the week. So I could work about 15 hours. So out of sheer faith that I was going to keep that job when I graduated, I quit my job at the tile plant.
So you did kind of like an internship?
Yes.
At UT?
I did.
While also doing clinical?
Yes.
While also going to school full time?
Yes.
While also caring for a family?
Yes.
While also managing a time zone?
Yes.
Okay. So have I told you I'm impressed yet?
No.
No? I'm so freaking impressed, but you already knew that.
Well, yeah. But one of the things that this did for me, well, not for me, one of the things that it has done for my students is I have no sympathy.
No, you know, you don't.
Oh, my car wouldn't start. Okay. Do you have another car? Do you have a friend?
Right.
You know, I can always find a reason why you should be there and your excuses don't matter.
You have a plan A, B, C, D.
Oh, I had to.
Yeah,
I had
absolutely.
To.
Well, yeah. And I think our students do too.
Right.
It's a patient that is depending on you. It is a team
right.
that is depending on you yes. to be there to pull your weight.
Exactly. Even as a student.
Absolutely.
They are depending on you to be there and you have a job to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Incredible. So right. I feel like you already knew what sacrifice looked like.
Yes.
And you already knew what dedication mm-hmm. looked like. You got the job, which showed that your hard work was paying off.
Right.
But where else does your motivation come from? Because you could have, honestly, Stephanie, you mm-hmm. could have literally, you know, graduated, gotten that certification, stayed at UT for the remainder of your, you know, your life.
Right.
Done very well.
Yeah.
And been successful.
Right.
So what happened?
Well, in 2011, so let's jump back a little. After I graduated, I worked at UT until 2008.
Yeah.
During that time, I would go back to on my days off because I worked 4/10s mm-hmm. and every other weekend. So I always had 2 days off during the week. And I did that so I didn't have to take call because I live so far away.
Sure.
And I would go on my days off when the kids were in school. I would go back to my program where I graduated from mm-hmm. and I would volunteer. I would help with lab or just whatever. So in 2008, I was asked to come and be a sub. One of the instructors had some health issues and was going to be out. And she eventually retired and I was asked to come on full time. And I was in late 2008. I guess it was in May of 2008. I was asked to go full time.
Right.
And so I was doing that and still working at UT every other weekend. Just to keep my hands in it.
Right.
And
it's
then
so hard to let go.
Yeah.
That.
And then they did away with my position and I went to Cookeville Regional Medical, small hospital. Shout out to my peeps down there because they were awesome.
Yeah.
Stayed there for 2 years and then decided that I needed to go back to the trauma, back to ortho, do the things that I missed doing in a smaller hospital. Yeah.
It's addicting.
It is addicting.
It's really.
And I really missed it. And so I went back to UT. Well, that last day at Cookeville, I was in a car accident. I could still see the hospital. That's how close I was.
My gosh.
And I was rear-ended. Dude was doing about 45 and I was sitting still at the red light and didn't know it at the time. But about 2 weeks after the accident, I had 3 fingers on my left hand that started going numb. Yes, I'm left-handed.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. And so about 6 weeks after that, I had to have surgery. I had my first cervical fusion. This was my very first one. And
you were, let's tell everybody, like your job, you were an ortho.
Ortho scrub.
Ortho scrub.
Yes.
Ortho trauma.
Yes.
Like, so.
Loved it.
Not that you're not used to manual labor.
Right.
But I mean, that's the epitome of manual labor in the operating room.
It is.
For sure.
So. Sat through orientation, couldn't even hardly move. I was so sore from the wreck still, you know, because I went to work on Monday.
Right.
After the wreck on Friday. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I had that happen. And then I had the disc fused. I had to have the disc removed and the vertebrae fused. And about, let's say that was in 2012. Well, it was in 2011 when I had surgery. And then in 2013, I started having problems again.
Right.
And I got to thinking, you know, I was having headaches from wearing the hoods. I was starting to have some numbness issues coming back and I dropped an implant. And we all know how that works.
Oh man. So you were not the favorite person in the room.
Not always. No. Yeah. And so, you know, there were some things that happened that were, I was seeing the writing on the wall myself.
Sure.
And I'm like, you know, I really have to start thinking about my next step. Well, in 2009, I had taken my credits from TCAT because I had already been to college at Rome State and I combined those credits and was able to get my associate's degree. Didn't even have to take any more classes. I had enough credit already.
And how many, just let's pause at that because how many people listening right now are probably in that very similar situation where all of your work for your certificate, for your diploma, all of that means something.
It does.
In the long timeline towards getting your associates. And so, you know, pause and think about it because I think maybe we just don't think, well, what's the point?
Right. Well, reach out to your community colleges in the area, because a lot of times they have a prior learning credit that they can give you for being in those vocational programs that will go toward that next degree.
And being an employee of the hospital, so many of our hospital systems also now have, you know, tuition education, reimbursement, you know, some education program that will help you with that.
Right.
But I just, please hear that, those of you who are listening tonight and, you know, in the future, that you may already be in the same boat that Stephanie was, and it might be something you could take advantage of that could be as simple as signing the documents and, you know, checking the box. And look at what it did for you. Right.
Well, yeah, because
so you got that associate degree.
I had my associate degree. So then here I am in 2013, which is what, 4 years later.
Yeah.
Deciding that, you know, I really need to go back to school. I've got to figure out what I want to do with my life.
Right.
And I thought, huh, maybe I can get into education. So I had applied for a job at TCAT in Knoxville. I had applied for a job at Rome State. They had other people in mind for that. And I started going to Siena Heights University in Adrian, Michigan, completely online. They took my associate's degree. They gave me prior learning credit for my work from where I had been a tech.
It really? Was, and so it was not just your classroom experience.
Correct. It was a bachelor's of applied science in surgical technology.
Which I love. There are so few programs.
There are.
I mean, it's growing.
It is.
But I think ultimately, like, you know, shocker, I think the surgical technology degree is going to end up being a bachelor's.
Eventually. It already is overseas. I was reading an article the other day, and there are other countries that it is already an associate or a bachelor's degree program.
So we're getting there. And I think so many of us, the bachelor, like, I love that your bachelor's is in surgical technology. Mine was criminal justice with a concentration in forensics.
Yes.
So you can see how often I use that, in my daily life. But it was a box that had to be checked because just having a bachelor's in front or after my name opened doors.
It did.
And it did the same thing for you.
And it doesn't really necessarily matter what you get that bachelor's in. It can be in anything that you're
basket weaving.
That's underwater, what I always say.
Underwater basket weaving.
Yes.
Which is way more talented than
us. But the way I found Siena Heights, I was flipping through the AST magazine. Hmm. And that's how I found that school. And I would recommend it to anybody. And no, I'm not getting paid for this advertisement.
No.
But I would recommend it to anybody. They have a fantastic program. They work well with you. It was the easiest process I ever went through.
And you were still working in the operating room while getting your bachelor's. So what you're saying is that's completely possible.
It is. It's very possible, very doable.
Yeah.
And I did that until I was hired by Virginia College in Knoxville. We all know what happened to them, but that's another story for another day. But I was
love it when you give me future podcasts.
Yes, yes.
Thank you.
But I was working there, and they hired me as an instructor. The program director and all of the faculty members all quit the same day.
So you're saying, so just for those who aren't in education, there are different levels of responsibility in a surgical technology program.
Right.
So we have adjunct faculty, which are like part-time faculty for some of us.
Yeah.
Some of us. Yes. Anyway, we won't get into my story.
Another podcast.
This is about you, Stephanie Austin. So then we have faculty, which are full-time faculty, but usually their responsibility is limited to either the course that they're teaching or the particular clinical site they're supporting students at.
Correct.
You know, then you have your clinical coordinator. That's usually the second in command of the entire program.
Correct.
That person is in charge of clinical site placement, usually the lab portion of a program.
All the clinical paperwork.
All the clinical paperwork. Yeah, all the joy. Joy. And then you have the program director. I'm a department chair, so I guess
they have different names.
Yeah, it's different. But that's the person where the buck stops here.
Yes.
And you're in charge for the entirety of the program.
Correct.
All the things.
Right.
All the things. So, yes. So we'll back up from that. So now that we've kind of defined the different roles, so you started out as an instructor.
I did. Because
so in your scope if, you know, in your thinking, you were thinking you've got this assignment.
Right.
And you have this responsibility. Correct. And it's limited to that.
Except,
then life happened.
Right. Well, yeah, there was a lot of things happened all at one time with this. You know, they, their whole department left. They had brought a program director from another campus to hold the fort down until they could get an instructor hired. And so not only was I teaching all the classes, I was also doing all the clinical and I was doing all the labs. I was a one man show.
Yeah.
We'll say it like it is.
And there's so many, shout out to all those one man shows out there right
absolutely,
now. There are way too many of you. We're not going to talk about my mess.
We're not going to get into all of that today. That's another podcast.
Right. But I mean, the ability to do all of that. And also there was accreditation involved. Is that correct?
Yes. They were in initial accreditation status. They had not even turned in their self-study, which for those of you who don't know, you apply for accreditation to have your program accredited. And then once you apply, there are certain criteria you have to meet. And then they send you the paperwork for your self-study. And my self-study was over 700 pages. And you have to put all of that together. And then after that, then you have an on-site visit and they come to your campus. They look at all of your things. And then after they do that, then they go back and they either recommend you for, well, they figure out what is wrong.
Yeah.
And then after they figure out what is wrong, they send you a letter that you have to respond to fix any problems. So it's a big, long process.
What I want to know, though, is that did you even know any of that existed when you took that first job? Did you even know what a self-study or accreditation was?
So before we get to that, I was the instructor. Okay?
Yeah, right.
That's all I did was teach. Went in my boss's office and I said, we were just chit-chatting.
Yeah.
And she said, we're getting ready to hire the program director. I had no idea what the qualifications were. She said, I looked at her and I said, am I qualified?
Yeah.
She said, well, yeah, you are. And I said, I would like to be considered.
What a way to take that jump.
I did. I just jumped in. I'm already doing it anyway.
Right.
And so they interviewed me and two other people. And there was one person on the committee that didn't think it was a good idea to hire me because I didn't have enough experience.
Hmm.
And my boss, shout out to Christine Adams. You're my rock star. You know that. But she took a chance on me. And put me in that position. And I just had a conversation with her the other day. We had program director meetings every single day and it was all on retention and different things. And she would pop off words in these meetings and I would write them down. And then I would go back to my office and look up what they meant. Cause I had no idea what she was talking about.
Well, the language I think of academia versus the language of medicine, even, and just completely different.
Oh yeah.
So
totally different.
Yeah. You have to learn.
Right.
You have to learn how to speak that.
So long story short, did the self-study, got accredited.
Congratulations.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so that's how I got into being a program director and into the more administrative part of the profession.
So now you have your bachelor's.
I do.
You're working full time.
Yes, I was working full time and I said, I'm done with school. I'm not doing this. And 6 months later, I'm like, okay, fine. Siena Heights had a master's program in higher education leadership.
Now, what made you go there?
Because that's where I got my bachelor's.
No, I mean, what made you go from bachelor's to master's? Like why did you... Where was your motivation for making that jump? I think right now, bachelor's, I don't feel like that's too far-fetched for most people, especially in just our current climate.
Right.
But going from, undergrad to graduate, where did that come from inside of you?
Well, I mean, part of it was because of somebody who told me a long time ago I wasn't smart enough. That was a little of it.
Uh-huh.
I always saw more in myself than what I had accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
And I always felt like I had not done myself a service. I'd always done myself a disservice by not pursuing what I knew I could do.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, and I wasn't going to do it. I tried my best to talk myself out of it. And I thought, now's the time.
Right.
If I'm going to do it, I need to just continue. Now that I'm in the habit of studying and all of that, I just need to continue.
I talked to my students a lot about that too. Yeah. Now that, you know, my graduates, you're in the zone, like you're already used to it. And there's just something for continuing down, you know, you've got another year or two in you. I think it's even harder when we stop.
Yes.
Because I did that. Like I stopped after my bachelor's and trying to get back into the rhythm of being in school is very difficult. Yes. So if you are in school right now, please keep going.
Yes.
You always have that one more semester, one more, you know, that one more year, even if you don't go full time. I feel like if you just keep pushing through.
I haven't gone full time since I was 20 years old.
Yeah. And maybe that's the key is, you know, going down that pathway and taking on what you can, but also learning, you know, the moment where you're like, and I've lost my sanity.
Yes. And I've done that several times. Yeah. Graduate school is a different animal.
It's a lot of writing.
It's a lot of writing experience. And there's really not a whole lot of test taking.
Yeah.
So it's a lot more on you. Right. Then
you can't study for the
you
test.
You can't study for it, right?
Not that you should, students. But anyway, we'll move on.
But but you know, there was a lot more to it, and it was a lot of writing, and so I've learned a lot from that.
Right.
But and there again, graduated in 2019 with my master's, with higher education leadership, with a minor in healthcare management.
That's awesome.
And then
a wild hair crawled up and you decided what?
I said, no, I'm done. I'm not going back to school.
Third time. I'm done.
4 months after I graduated, I got an email from the University of St. Augustine for Health Sciences. And the name intrigued me. Mm-hmm. That's why I even opened it, because the rest of them I was just deleting.
Right.
Because I didn't want to be tempted. And I won't lie, they were offering 25% off of tuition.
That's a big motivator.
But then I called and talked to them and I'm like, I can do this. Because their motto was, if you get to the dissertation, we will get you through the dissertation.
Wait, say that again.
If you get to the dissertation, we will get you through the dissertation.
If that doesn't make you feel like you're wrapped up in a warm, fuzzy blanket, I don't know what would be.
Well, I don't feel very warm and fuzzy right now.
I'll help you out. Yeah.
So
you kept going.
I did. I started that January. I graduated in August of 2019 and I started the EDD program
in January.
And I'm doing an emphasis in teaching and learning.
So I want to tell them a little bit about where you're at right now, right?
Yeah.
So you're the director of the Walter State Community College in Sevierville.
Correct.
And your main campus is located in
Morristown. Yes.
I will say the Sevierville campus is gorgeous.
Though. Yes.
Yes.
We have the prettiest campus. Sorry, yeah, Morristown.
And then also you are not only are you running an incredibly successful surgical technology program, but you are also creating a very, very needed program, especially in this area. I know it is all over the country,
right?
But a certification for sterile processing. Is that correct?
Yeah. And it's something that we're going to incorporate into the surgical technology program that's going to allow our surgical technology students, if they choose to do the clinical portion of it, because I don't know how many of you across the country don't have classes in the summer.
Not many of us.
I know. Sorry. But my students don't. And there's a long story. I'll tell y'all that one day. But there's a reason for it. But my students, if they choose, can do the clinical portion of sterile processing over the summer. And then they can graduate with 2 certifications.
So they'll be certified surgical technologists and certified sterile processors.
Yes. And that is
phenomenal.
Yeah. And that's very important to our rural areas in East Tennessee, because they don't always have the support in sterile processing they need. And this gives them the opportunity to cross train.
Educated people.
Yes, they have educated people. Right. Absolutely. And this has been, you know, supported by my hospitals. That's what got this started.
Yeah. So when are you through with your doctorate? Put it out there
April
in the universe.
If nothing goes wrong, April of 2023.
April of 2023.
Yes.
You heard it here. So now she has to do it. I made her do that on purpose.
And I am at this moment That's within the last 2 weeks, I am officially a doctoral candidate or dissertation candidate.
High five over the airways.
Yep.
Everyone, please be doing the same thing. Yeah. Air high five.
Yeah.
So what I want to kind of summarize with in the last few minutes that we have is that your dissertation is incredibly important to our field as educators in surgical technology. And you need our help.
I will need your help.
Yes, you absolutely will. So just to summarize this kind of crazy journey that you have pushed through and knocked out, what do you need from us?
Well, my dissertation topic is, do surgical technologists who are transitioning from clinical practice into education receive the educational support that they need to be educators?
No. Okay, next.
Right. But that's the topic. And the thing is there's absolutely zero research on it. There is some research in nursing that I'm having to use to pull to show that they have the gap. We have the same gap.
And there's correlation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And any allied health profession is going to have a lot of the same similarities. And so what I'm going to be looking for are new educators in, you know, beginning up to about year five.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be open-ended questionnaires and hopefully, possibly, face-to-face focus groups at, shout out to Etacred, focus group at Etacred in October, possibly, and maybe some individual interviews at the conference if we get the opportunity.
Yeah.
If I'm at the point to where I can do interviews at the national conference, there could possibly be some done then, but there's a lot of red tape that has to go on before you can do any kind of
and you mean
the actual research.
You mean red tape with like mine. with your educational program.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, I think that, I mean, obviously I will volunteer to tell you all the things I don't know.
Yes.
The list is long. But after you spoke at the AST Educators Conference, there were many people that also were volunteering to help with this.
Right. And the thing is that I'm only going to be able to use about between 10 and 20 individuals.
Sure.
Because if I get it too large, there'll be too much information and I won't be able to analyze it quick enough. This is not something like with your quantitative studies that I can just throw it into a program and it does all of the analysis.
Right.
This is going to be, I'm going to sit down with the surveys and have to do the analysis myself.
Right. And really get into the nitty gritty of what, you know, we already said it before that the language we speak in medicine, I mean, you know how incredibly important it is for students to have medical terminology at the beginning.
Yeah.
And yet academia speaks this entirely different language that we are very, I think, ignorant to from the OR. I also want to say that you are an incredible example of how it's very easy for us to be so patient-focused, surgeon-focused, even specialty, you know, focused and within our clinical or our hospital sites, we get narrow-minded. We get those blinders on because our job ultimately is the patient and taking care of, you know, he or she who's scared to death and needs somebody to hold their hand.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
So, but I guess what I want people to hear and take away from tonight is that there is a bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there are doors opening for us down pathways we didn't even know existed.
Exactly.
And so, you know, what is your, I'm going to let you have the last word because, and that's hard for me.
She will still get the last word. Still, I guarantee
yes,
it.
Yes. It's all right. I'll record it later.
Yeah.
But what I want to hear is what made you take the blinders off and why should that matter to people who are just trying to get through their shift and get to huddle on time and feed their families? Like, where, I guess you hear it, right? I don't have enough money. And, you know, my kids I don't have time. You've heard all of those things.
Yeah.
You've said them to yourself.
Oh, yes.
How did you overcome that?
So here's what I tell a lot of people when they start talking, well, I'm too old or I'm too this or I'm too that. 32 years ago was when I enrolled for my first college class. It took me 18 years to get that associate's degree. 18 years. And now here I am just a few more years later, and I'm almost through my doctorate program. You have to find what you're passionate about. Mm-hmm. And by golly, surgical technology was mine. There is no doubt in my mind. But education is also that too. But you always have to be looking for something else, because you never know when that car is going to hit you in the rear end and you're not going to be able to do the job that you love so much. Yeah. You have to find a plan B, mm-hmm. and make sure that when that time comes, that you're ready to take that next step.
And I think that it would be remiss to say that that next step for surgical technologists, mm-hmm. has typically been, I'm going to go be an RN.
Right.
And that needs to stop being the answer.
It's not the only answer.
It's not. It is an answer.
It is a answer.
Right.
But you know, we need educators.
There are other pathways. We need help in the classroom.
We do. We need educators. And that's what I tell my students every day.
And I love you for that.
Yes.
Stephanie Austin, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you both to the soon-to-be Dr. Stephanie Austin for being my special guest tonight. Thank you to you all out there in the podcast realm for supporting us and what we are trying to do here at The Scrub Life. You will hear more from Stephanie as time goes on. Stephanie is an essential part of what I do behind the scenes with our podcast, and you will definitely hear her in front of the mic more often as we continue to grow. And we could not grow without your support, without your encouragement, and without you telling your friends about it. So please, if you have any questions, concerns, comments, if you'd like to get in contact with us, there are so many ways to do it. You can reach The Scrub Life Podcast on Facebook at The Scrub Life Podcast, Instagram at Scrub Life Podcast. Of course, our email is thescrublifepodcast@outlook.com. And you can always find show notes on not just tonight's episode, but previous episodes on our webpage. That's thescrublifepodcast.wordpress.com. Again, my name's Chris Blevins. I'm just a CST like you all, and the occasional accidental podcaster. With that, thank you, everyone. I hope you have an amazing week. The sun is definitely starting to shine, so let's get out there and get some fresh air, and hopefully it doesn't end in an orthopedic visit. With that, I'm signing off, and I look forward to seeing you all soon and to another episode. Good night.